Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, welcome everybody. Here District, Marcus Johnson, joined by my first mate on this fantastic voyage. I haven't said that in a while. Chris Johnson, what's up, Chris? How you doing? Everything good?
Oh, I'm great, MJ. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing wonderful, man. It's you know, it's good to kind of get this day behind us and to help us kind of take a look at all the happenings of this trade deadline, February 5th day. Justin Garcia. Justin is the color commentator and analyst for the Bucks Radio Network, works with our good buddy Dave Kane, who is a favorite of the show, especially when he's got his dog stories. But Justin, welcome to the Here District, man.
Thanks for having me back. Dave is really a friend of the show. You guys would go that far to say
Dave is great.
Dave opens up when he gets on here with us. He opens up, he gets deep, he dives deep.
He starts talking about those pooches and the dogs and the football games with the dogs and all that. And mm-hmm. it's riveting conversation. But speaking of riveting conversations, man. Justin, were you surprised by the lack of movement with the big fella? Let's just start with the big story.
No, I wasn't surprised on that front. I mean, I think we know everything that had been around there locally. The Bucks are in no hurry or not looking to proactively move on from him. So that was never a surprise. It would have been a shock to me if something would have happened there. And with any divorce, you know, you need one of the parties to say this is it, and we're just not there. And I've talked about it before. I think I'm not going to speak for you. I'd assume you feel the same way. I just don't ever envision the Bucks coming to that front of we're ready to move on from Giannis, not just because he's one of the three best players in the league right now, and you know, the greatest arguably player as a member of the Bucks in franchise history. But it goes beyond that, too, with what he means for the organization financially, for the city as well, that it's beyond basketball in that sense. So I never saw any situation where that ended here at the trade deadline. Who knows where it goes beyond that, but surprised, no.
Now, when we say the greatest Buck in history,
I added the caveat.
And Eric Name likes to always use that in everything he writes. The greatest, arguably the greatest. I mean, are we giving him that, Chris, above Kareem? I mean, that'd be the only other player because of longevity, because of what?
I mean, he's been there 11. Oh, go ahead, Justin. Go ahead, Justin.
No, go ahead, Chris. You take it. Well, I mean, look, I obviously didn't experience the Kareem era. I wasn't around for that. I was around for the glory years of the Bucks in the 90s, just after you were done, MJ, where there wasn't a whole lot to root for. So all of my experience with what that era was hearing about it from others and researching it. But I mean, look, it's comparable, the numbers that they put up. Kareem has appeared in two finals with the Bucks versus one so far from Giannis. To me, the bigger thing is when I say, and I think this is kind of where Eric is coming from too, when I say I think Giannis is the greatest in franchise history, it's not only because of the statistics where it's Giannis and Kareem at the top of everything, but it's also who knows where this franchise is if it weren't for Giannis developing into what he did with what they were coming off of in that era I talked about in the 90s and early 2000s and what great the league point was and all the rumblings of what's the future of the Bucks in Milwaukee. To me, it's that in what he meant for pushing them into that level of franchise.
Yeah, and we also have to take into account that nowadays when we view or describe greatness, we got to take everything else into factor everything else, you know, the impact on the community, how much he's loved, you know, the financial side of things, Justin, that you so astutely pointed out. Giannis, I mean, the Here District, Fiserv, all that, you know what I mean? It's like, is that happening? Are the Bucks like one of the top organizations outside of basketball in the league if it wasn't for Giannis? So I agree, he is the greatest Buck. We can split hairs over him and Kareem, but, you know, it's Giannis is the greatest Buck in Bucks history.
Well, and just to tag on that, and look, I don't have a problem with that. I just think it's worthy of some conversation. and that's what we're here for. But I think his backstory too. You know, what was he, 16, 17, pick in the draft, somewhere 15, around there. Yeah. 15, 18, you're skinny, wide-eyed. I mean, you know, and even when I got here, when he was like 19 going on 20, so he'd been in the league a couple of years, I think, at that point. But you still didn't know what you had. I mean, I really thought this at that time, that if Giannis could average 21 and 7 or 8 rebounds a game, make an All-Star game or two at the, you know, as a guy that was named by the, I thought that would be the ceiling for him. That'd be a good ceiling for him, an excellent ceiling for him. And he's just, to your point, you know, Chris, in terms of and Justin too, he's just superseded all that, man. He blew that out the water. Kareem, we knew coming in. Kareem was one of the greatest college players still. In the history of college basketball, three-time
NCAA. The greatest high school prospect.
Out of Power Memorial, just a 7'2", graceful freak of nature kind of a player. Giannis, we didn't know. And for him to be a finals MVP, a 50-piece in the closeout game, two-time MVP, and, you know, so, yeah, I have no problem with that. So,
well, I think we started the same year. Was your first year on the broadcast the 15-16 season?
Giannis was turning 20, whenever he was 19 going on 20, I believe.
That was mine, my first year with the radio. And it was the same thing. Like, when they drafted Giannis, you didn't know what to expect, but you just looked at it like, okay, this is the type of thing they need to do with the spot that they're in. You might as well just take a lottery ticket here and see if you win with this guy. And it just gradually built from, yeah, maybe he can be a starter. And okay, he's definitely going to be a starter caliber player. Maybe he can be an all-star. And it just kept ascending year after year from there.
You never know. You know, when you swing for the fences, Darko. I'm thinking of Darko as a number, what, 2 pick or something like that with the number. Was he number 2? Number 2 with the Pistons. And they bought him in, and he just blew him away in the workout. But, you know, he never stuck. And so Giannis turned out to be the exact opposite. Go ahead, Chris.
MJ, you always bring up that stretch of – I forgot what year it was in Giannis's career, but where Jason Kidd played him at point guard, and he did something like average a triple-double, and you always point to that moment or that experience for Giannis as sort of that springboard into the dude that we see now. Am I getting that right? I mean, you're saying that like that 2-week stretch of him playing, he wouldn't have been the same player.
Well, it was right today. after the All-Star break. The Bucks were out of the playoffs. You could see that this team was not going to make it in the playoffs. And so Jason Kidd's like, look, I might as well. And Jason Kidd knows what the F he's doing. He knows what the F he's doing. That's Jason Kidd. I know what the F he's doing. I played this game at the highest level. I know what the F. You know, that's my boy. I love Jason Kidd.
That's our dog, man.
And Chris was the first one to turn me on to him, Justin. I was playing for the Golden State Warriors.
Listen to this.
Had a shot of cappuccino, not even a cup of coffee, like a 10-game stint. After being out 3 years, it hurt my neck, came back 3 years, and Don Nelson, you know, threw me a bone and signed me with the Warriors. But while we were in Alameda up in Oakland, Chris went to a high school game. He came back, Justin, saying that I saw the greatest high school player, Dad. And Chris, you're all of what, 14 years old, baby? This is 1989. Yep. All of 14 years. Dad, I just saw the greatest. I'm like, this kid, what does he know? He's 14 years old. This kid, Jason Kidd, Dad, this guy played for St. Joe's Alameda. I'm like, he's 14 years old. What the hell does he know about the greatest? But then, you know, I saw him a couple of years later and state champions and all that good stuff. But the point is that, yeah, that was that stretch, Chris, after the All-Star break. And Giannis, I forget the exact averages, but he had about 4 or 5 triple doubles. Don't quote me on that, but he had multiple triple doubles, and he was averaging maybe 21, 22, 12 rebounds, 7 or 8 assists. I mean, the numbers were like eye opening, and that's when I kind of first saw the potential there. But still, you know, it was still a long way from being a done deal. But Justin, in terms of Giannis is he's swing low sweet caveat. He's the caveat king. He is a caveat king, man, because he's always got these great moments. I mean, these heart pull on the heartstring. My father's buried here. Yeah. My mother's front door is 10 seconds from my house on the same property. I grew up here. I had my kids here. I got married here. Yeah. And then he said something about getting married officially here. It was a weird thing.
Giannis is always going to give you some weird stuff. Well, you be like,
you ask him about.
It was a weird, you know, you had to kind of like, wait, hold it. But then he goes into, you know, the obvious. You know, I still want to win. I'm a competitor and all that. So, I mean, what your take on that? That not only Jim Ozarski's article, but then Eric Name, he gave him. Yeah. And that's the thing about Giannis. He spoke to Jim, gave him a lot of great stuff. Then he called up Eric Name and gave him.
Shout out, know, man. That was unbelievable.
Gave him great stuff, too. So, but your thoughts, Justin, when you read that, did you get sentimental and emotional, or did you like look at it like, oh, boy?
A little column A, little column B. I talked to Eric about it too, like about the whole backstory and how that came. Of like, no, everything I wrote is exactly how it happened. Where Giannis just has known me long enough and said, I talked to Jim, so I want to give you the chance to hear from me as well. And called me just after midnight, and we talked for a while, and I didn't file the story until 4 a.m. But yeah, reading it, just like there was a lot of things that we're well aware of, but you don't take into account too. Of like when he mentioned. Yeah. Burying his father here.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, I didn't realize that. And like how, look, my children, and this is something that will stick with them forever. They're born in Milwaukee, and this is their home. And I think even the stuff that we've all pointed out, too, of like, well, just so you know, like this could be different. And his acknowledgement of it, too, and that it's not like it's exclusive to Milwaukee, but it is different in places like Milwaukee than it is when you go to a bigger market that people let me be. People are just going to, they're respectful towards me. I can go about and be as close to normal as I can within the community. And I understand I'm not going to get that everywhere, that there was a lot of those things that you were like, okay, I wasn't surprised by any of it. And if anything, it just kind of reaffirmed what I think we all have deep down felt this whole time, that I'm sure the challenge for him has been that loyalty. And I mean, there's people that have come and gone from the organization that have been important, that he has that loyalty to. But the organization as a whole, this is the only professional job he's known and had in the States. And those relationships he's developed, the people that helped get his parents over here and make them citizens, his family being here, like that's all part of the struggle for a competitor like Giannis who wants to continue to compete at that level, and knowing this year is not gone as expected. And it's going to be a challenge to do that here in the short term. That's my desire, but I'm grappling with, I really want to make it happen here and do it here.
Yeah.
One of my favorite stories, Chris, Justin, is Dave Dean, who executive with the Bucks, kind of oversees the G League team in Oshkosh and all that. Great guy. But he talks about teaching Giannis how to drive when Giannis first got here and tooling around in a Toyota Corolla, something really small. And Giannis's knees are up in his chest and he's about to run into stuff and all that. And Dave is like, you know, just sitting on the edge of his seat. And that means a lot. Right, Chris? I mean, he spent 13 years. He spent 13 years from 18 to 31 years old that he's been in this city. He made that. That was a great point by him. More time here than in his native country, Greece. So, I mean,
And then the experience that he had here in formidable years. You know what I mean? Like learning how to drive, growing up, coming of age as a man.
That learning means what a smoothie is.
Learning what a smoothie is. You know, all that type of stuff. All that type of stuff. But again, I go back. And it didn't, I mean, the whole Giannis thing really didn't resonate with me fully until I watched the movie, Giannis, The Marvelous Journey. And then just to hear those stories, the backstories, Giannis is like one of the most genuine dudes when he starts talking. And when he talked about how much it meant for him, and like Justin, you just mentioned it, for his family, to bring his family over, to give him the citizenship. And then him and Thanasis being here, just them two kind of learning, you know, America. And that entire journey and experience, it develops a sense of undeniable loyalty to the people that facilitated that. And so I know it sounds like, you know, we tend to view NBA players through a certain lens, but I don't think we could view Giannis through this lens, no matter how sometimes, you know, cloudy the messaging may be. His heart, he's one of those dudes that embodies his heart is in a good place and he means well. It's like, for me, no matter what he says, I feel like he means well. Sometimes it doesn't necessarily come off like that, but I do think that the loyalty factor, his undying love and appreciation for that portion of his life and his family's life, I think that's all. I mean, I think that's been the big conundrum for him and why it's made it so tough and why he couldn't just say, hey, trade me. You know what I mean? It's like he's pulled so tough with that loyalty, in my opinion. I don't know.
Yeah, no,
Go ahead. Really quick, I think he's a relatable guy, you know, like more so than a lot of stars that we can't relate to the talents that he has, but we can relate to his journey and his story and the blue collar approach and working for everything that he's gotten. There's a lot that's relatable to him. And I think this chapter is another one of those things where it's no different from anyone that's listening to this show and any one of us that has, you know, worked various jobs throughout your life where the longer you're in one place, the more things around you change and you have your favorite coworkers and people that you've reported to and grown accustomed to. And you develop those relationships that just for various reasons, one by one, they're no longer there. And you have to kind of embrace the change around you. And that's a struggle for all of us to try to figure out how to navigate that. And I think that's one of the things he's going through this year.
Yeah, it brought to mind one of my favorite moments with Giannis. There's been quite a few. I mean, Spike Lee giving him, Chris, the memento from Do the Right Thing, I think a street sign or something at the hotel down in Atlanta. But we're in New York City, staying at the Essex House right near Central Park. My daughter Shiloh is there. We're having a great time. And so we run into Giannis in the lobby. So I asked him, to take a picture with Shiloh. He takes a picture. So Giannis asked me just real casual, like, "Well, how many kids do you have?" So I was like, "I got 7 kids." He's like, "I'm going to have 8 kids. 8 kids. I'm going to." And unfortunately, Mariah, you guys are halfway there. but it's just that kind of enthusiasm, and I just kind of brushed it off as just like, "Oh yeah," but he really had that desire to have a big family, and he loves
Shout
kids.
Out Giannis.
He's a big kid himself and all that good stuff. So, man, now I'm getting tweets and getting texts from people around the city talking about this tweet that Giannis put up from Wolf of Wall Street. Yeah. What did it say? It said, what was the gist of it?
It's the gist of it. So it's hopefully things work out better for Giannis and the Bucks than it did for Leo in that movie. But that's the scene where Leo gets on the mic and everybody thinks he's about to resign and just rallies the troops and tells him, "I'm not bleeping leaving." And Giannis posted that exact part. And there was something else of like, stars don't leave, they attract or something along those lines. Yeah.
Legends attract. I will say the Giannis, that tweet was high level social media work from Giannis. That was one of his better offerings that he's delivered. I mean, it was so spot on and on the money. Justin, what do you think about that type of stuff? That type of messaging? Like, what is that? Like, what is he trying to say there? Like, what is that? What's up with that?
Well, my hope is he's trying to say, look, nothing to worry about. Come October 1st, we got this thing settled. I mean, it's calculated. It's interesting, too, that Giannis, as everybody had kind of poured over and put a lot of stress into, cleansed his social media accounts and went very silent on that front. And you look through at this tweet, too. It's the first one since posting a picture of him dunking back in December. So this is what he returned to just say, legends attract people to come to them versus leaving. Yeah. We're still in Milwaukee past the trade deadline. And it just adds to the intrigue, too, where, you know, as we said this, I don't think any of us are going to sit here and tell you the season has gone as expected so far. But it's a different story in the offseason where they have a lot more flexibility than they've ever had in quite some time. I mean, even this past year when they did what they did to create enough space to sign Miles Turner, they have even more flexibility this summer.
No, it's funny because I got a text, Chris, from my buddy Lance and his brother Corey Reed, who was All-State at Rufus King, won a state championship back in the day, played at Ohio right after the Mac of the Shaq.
Shaq of the Mac.
Shaq of the Mac.
Gary Trent.
Yeah, Gary, yes, Gary Trent Sr. left Shaq of the Mac. But Lance says, without a doubt, one of the greatest social media posts by a Wisconsin athlete ever. I can't remember any of your posts from back in the day, Garvey. That's what they call me, Marcus Garvey. But this was classic, even if he does leave. And it gave me goosebumps. So I didn't want to, you know, let him know that we didn't have social media back then. There was no social media back in the day. You know,
I don't know about you guys. I thank God for that every day. Social media when I was 18. Yeah.
I mean, whatever knowledge I could dispense at the Park Avenue nightclub after games in the midst of all the smoke and all that stuff. The Studio 54. The Studio 54 of Milwaukee back in the day. No, but
wow.
But he's taking some heat, too. I guess that's part of it, right, Chris, you guys know better than I do, but there's a lot of people that are talking about, yeah, well, nobody's coming to Milwaukee, and your days are you're going to rot there.
Who cares? Who cares? Who cares? They always hating on Milwaukee. National media is always taking this shady disposition. You know, MJ, we've lived through it. Justin, preseason, you saw all the narratives. You see what the reporting, how the reporting goes. In my opinion, it's like, come on, man. I understand when there's something there, and I understand when, you know, as someone that is paid to break news and things like that, and you talk to someone from someone's camp, like your responsibility is to come out and say what it is. But to me, you know, I don't know. I think this didn't go the way the reporting didn't go the way that it didn't reflect reality. A lot of it seemed contrived at times, in my opinion. I don't know. You know, and that, I'm not trying to slam Shams on that, but not maybe not contrived, but I don't know, man. I just, Justin, what's your take on just how this whole scenario has been covered?
Yeah, I mean, I pay as little attention to it as possible. It's obviously impossible to avoid, but it's just like, not to sound like the old guy, but like how reporting has become a transactional business is the biggest issue to me, that there's always a motive there. Like fans are going to dig their heels and say, well, this is all fabricated and yada, yada, yada. And it doesn't mean it's coming from the inner circle or Giannis. A lot of times it can be stuff like, well, there's a team that would have an incentive to maybe create a rift, and oh, if that happens, like, we could benefit from this. Like, that's the transactional part to this business that has become the tough part to digest and have to sift through. Is like, yeah, I don't know that I need a constant update on which star is looking to leave and why. Like, just tell me what happened on the court.
Well, so speaking of on the court, and one of our executive producers, Mona's, pointed out that so as of this taping, we played the New Orleans Pelicans last night, beat them in overtime, despite 40 plus from Kenneth Murphy the third. Kenny was on fire last night, but Mona's pointed out that you know, we beat them, helping them in terms of their draft position. But they helped us because, you know, we get like the worst of the two draft positions between the Bucks and the Pelicans, even though I think the pick is owned by the Atlanta Hawks. I was wondering, I mean, so how does that work? The Hawks will tell them who to pick, or can the Pelicans, can they go rogue and just like, oh, here we are. We don't like Atlanta. We're gonna pick a guy who's, we're going to pick a free agent out there with the third pick. How does that work? I mean, they are obligated, I guess, probably.
Well, they just outright get the pick, yeah. So, who, I mean, and
the,
like,
the Pelicans get the pick.
The Hawks get the pick from New Orleans. So, like, you use New Orleans' record, and then it's just, they get to choose. I mean, I suppose there could be a scenario where they say, you know what, we'd rather have the lower pick than the higher pick, but they just then take that. And I mean, that's like the other problem too, with all the trades that we've seen in this one in particular, of pick swaps and protections. Yeah. Like, we need to do something to address, all right, we don't, like the trade earlier today with the Pacers of 1 through 5 and 10 through 30. Small window. Like, okay, can we remove that?
I caught that too.
You give up the pick or you don't. It's one or the other.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so now, so let's put that in perspective for the fans that are maybe not as aware of what's going on. So I mean, Giannis, he's got that soleus situation that he's had on and off since the last Boston game of the playoffs, going into the playoffs. I mean, what do you do? I mean, do you try and talk him into? I don't think you're going to talk him into sitting out, but a really serious minutes restriction, maybe 2 quarters, 24 minutes. You get 24 minutes to get your work done. But what do you do? I mean, what do you do in terms of because you can't, you want to keep a certain culture and all that. So I don't think it's on the players. I think I don't know. You tell me. You know where I'm going with this, but I know, what do you do?
Yeah, and like, that's the thing. You know, we talked about it a little bit on the broadcast too, with the game against the Pelicans. Is the thing that you cannot stress enough is it's easy for fans to sit back and say, well, just tank and lose games and increase your draft pick chances. Like, well, number one, there's a lot of variables attached to that. It's not as simple as we are getting a good pick for sure. There's a good chance if you finish where you are, you would get a good pick, but who knows? Maybe you win the lottery and the Pelicans don't, and then you give away the number one pick and you get 10. So like those scenarios are in play. But the bigger thing to me is what you just hit on, in that like players don't tank. You know, when you put players on the floor, you're competitors and you're playing to win. So there's that wrench in it, but also that is not the culture you want to build. And I get maximizing draft assets, but you don't want losing to seep in and bad play and that type of culture. That it's one thing to say it'd be great to get a good draft pick. It's another thing to actively take a step towards that. And what does that mean for the future of your team? So I just don't see, with a number of young guys that they have too, that you've seen develop, like Ryan Rollins, like you don't want those guys to experience losing and actively like, well, we're going to sit you and we're going to do this. So I don't see that as an approach. The tricky part is Giannis, as he's indicated, he's not going to sit out. And a guy that competes at the level Giannis does, none of us would expect him to say, okay, shut me down for the rest of the season. But how do you manage that? And that's a more of a question for their sports science staff too, of like, what's more effective if we keep you on a minutes restriction? Because we did that before and we got right back to the same spot. Or do we look at it and say, well, what if we play you this game and then you take two games off and we play you and we think that's a better way to manage this injury and deal with your health?
Yeah, I'm laughing because I'm thinking, oh, maybe you're playing 45 minutes a game when he comes back. And just no, I'm just being silly here.
Well, as Doc said, look, it's not unheard of. When we talked about Kevin Porter Jr. coming back, like, you guys know you can play a lot of minutes. It's perfectly fine.
Right. Yeah. No, but anyway, so that would be the perfect scenario, obviously. I mean, and one of the writers, I don't know if it was Eric or Jim, local guys, pointed out that, you know, that man, you mess around and get a, you know, the top five, top four, top three, even. I'm thinking real optimistically here. But
yeah, I mean, best case scenario is they could get the second pick.
One and two. New Orleans, New Orleans gets one. We get, or whatever, however it works out. But, you know, one and two. We get that second pick in the draft. And so now let's talk about the players that are out there. Let's just you know, for the sake of hypotheticals, we get a really great draft pick, two or three guys that you guys like. Educate our fans on guys out there, Justin, that you think are going to be really, really solid to great pros.
Well, I mean, every single player that I've scouted and spent a lot of time watching plays for the greatest team in the former Conference of Champions. So it's really limited to the Arizona Wild. No, I mean, it's loaded with guys that, you know, like the top three in particular, when you hear people talk about this is the greatest draft in decades, potentially, with the talent that's out there, that it's viewed as, I don't know if I would use can't miss, but there's three excellent pros out there in the making. When you're looking at AJ DeBonta, who carried the big name value, you got Boozer, the son of Carlos Boozer at Duke, and Darren Peterson, I think probably has the largest upside that people would look at and say, this is the guy that we think is as close to a finished product. Boozer has the pedigree, and I think he's probably the highest floor of those three guys. But those are guys you look at and you say, we think we can get them to come in right now and be impact players. The thing that makes this draft special, though, is beyond that. And realistically, this may be what you're targeting if you're the Bucks. There's what I've seen as many as like just outside of the lottery that people are viewing this as, even if you don't get one of those three guys, you're getting an immediate contributor. And the way to look at it too is like, look at Philly last year with they shut down Joel Embiid. It gradually, the health has returned where he's not MVP Joel Embiid, but he's looking pretty good. And you still have some young talent, but now you had VJ Edgecombe and what that's done for kind of reshaping that franchise on the fly. I think there's a lot of guys in this draft that the belief is like, these are VJ Edgecombe types, where it might not be he's the best player on your team or he's an immediate all-star type of guy, but this is a guy who can step in and contribute and not only be a role player, he could start for you immediately and give you that impact. And it's deep in this draft. So that's what the Bucks are in search of. And there's a number of those guys, even if you miss out on those top three names that we mentioned.
But Chris, before you answer, Doc Rivers made a comment that Joel Embiid was the greatest player he ever coached.
Most talented.
Okay. Well, yeah. Okay. That's a little different. Thoughts on that?
No, I don't have no thoughts on that. Joel, look, Joel is one of, like, when Joel
I could argue with him.
He was one of the nicest dudes we ever saw at the center. Like, there's no question. But durability, availability.
Sure.
I was gonna ask Justin, though, to kind of piggyback off of that the draft conversation. Positionally, where do you think the Bucks' priority should lie? In terms of if you had a chance to get a generational franchise cornerstone type of kid?
Ideally, you'd get a wing and I like a small forward type, because that is what they have been searching for ever since Chris Middleton's health became an issue for this team. There's a handful of those, A.J. DeBonta is a guy that plays the three that has some pretty nice size to him. If you could get in the top three, you got a chance at him. So, like, that type of guy, I think, is ideal for the Bucks because you feel like you're good in the front court and you got Ryan Rollins. You feel pretty good in the back court of, we can continue to add guys, but we feel like we got Rollins as something to continue to develop and build on. And we know we got Giannis and Miles Turner and other guys in the front court. And plus, bigs, with the way the game has evolved, I'm not going to say it's easy, but it's becoming easier to find bigs in the league that fit what you're doing. It's wings. It's big twos and it's threes that are the difficult thing to find. Like, every team is looking for, we'd love to get a big wing because that's the premium position. So that's number one for the Bucks. But, like, join the club, right, when you're searching for that and finding that impact guy.
Yeah, Chris, yeah. I got a question for you, though, real quick. Just help me out of this. Of these three guys on the big draft board that – Dylan Carter just sent me. So Caleb Wilson, Keaton Wagler, Mikael Brown Jr., Nate Emmett. And these guys I've heard of, but I haven't seen a lot of. Any of those guys stand out to you and Justin as going to be next level kind of dominating players?
Well, somebody that I've watched for a number of years when he was on the EYBL circuit, Caleb Wilson, has always stood out to me. North Carolina's Caleb Wilson. Long, extremely athletic. Very skilled. I mean, when I say extremely athletic, I mean, you know, doing some stuff, MJ, Duncan, taking off from places this year as a freshman, where you go be like, what?
Yeah,
you know
I've what seen I mean? That. I've seen that. Can he shoot? Can he shoot? Is he?
And that's the thing. Well, he's okay, right?
Okay.
But reps. Look, reps.
Right.
Repetition, and obviously, you know, the concerted effort to develop the jumper, that's going to be his big thing. But he's somebody that I look at as somebody that could come in today's NBA, be an instant, like, impact sort of dude. Another guy outside of that. My thing, I hear you about Ryan Rollins, Justin, and the backcourt. But my question is, and the way I would be thinking, if you can get one of these transcendent point guard like a guard, you know, like, say, Kingston Fleming's out of Houston.
Yeah.
You know, great size, a gamer, Keaton Wagler out in Illinois. Turning it out, just dropped 40 something on Purdue. You know, those type of three level scores, shoots it from three, can facilitate, makes all the reads. Like, I like the I just find it hard if you're in the Bucks front office to just pass up on one of these PGs because there's plenty of them.
Peterson,
I agree. And I think the benefit of Rollins is that, like, okay, it's either or. It's interchangeable. Yeah. Like, we could view him as we can continue developing our point guard, or he can be our off ball guy.
Yeah, good point.
Right. And his defense. So you pair him with another wing that is just decent defensively. I mean, you're going to be solid regardless of that. So let's talk about the move that the Bucks did make today. The guy they brought in, Usman Jang, out of OKC. Then I think he went someplace else.
OKC by way of – or Chicago by way of OKC and whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Now so, when we played OKC a few games ago – I did kind of look at some film of him. I did look at some film today. And I don't know, Chris Justin, I mean, he's interesting. He's 22 years old. He's 6'9", 190, 195. So he needs to put on some weight or whatever. But, I mean, Chris, he's in the 90s, whatever percentile in ISO. But, I mean, he can create his own shot. He's got the handle, tween, cross, tween. He's a little loose with that handle, loose with the passes, turns it over sometimes. But I don't know. I really believe this. And I think a guy like that, 5 months with Giannis in terms of seeing the work ethic, seeing what it takes to reach that level, could turn out to be something. What? I don't know. But I think it's worth a shot. Any opinions on the new addition to the Bucks?
It's the exact type of move I think you need to make at this spot. You talked about the talent is clearly there. He was the 11th pick, and it's funny, he was taken one spot in front of his former teammate in Jalen Williams, who eventually found his way to Oklahoma City through a trade, did Usman Jang. But he is clearly a talented guy. I looked at the same stuff as you, MJ, and immediately went to cleaning the glass and pulled up some clips through from Second Spectrum to see, okay, what am I getting here? The jump shot looks nice. He likes to score in isolation. He's very good at off the dribble pull-up jump shots. It's obviously a very small sample size that we're looking at, so that's the thing. But you know, I've heard some people say, well, I don't know, like if the Thunder are giving up on a player, is that a young guy? Is that the guy you want to go after? Like, well, also the Thunder have young guys in spades, that there's just no room. And that's the same reason why they traded first rounders for Jared McCain, of we can't take on another one of these guys. We got no room. So those are the exact guys in a Sam Presti organization with the pipeline we've seen there. Yes, that's a guy I want to take a flyer on and develop. And, you know, for you to, I think, make a nice piece of business, as they say, to say, we're going to turn two expiring contracts into a guy that is a free agent, but there's clear talent here, and he's 22 years old. And I think the upside is even greater defensively for him, that we got 30-plus games to see not only how it looks next to Giannis, how it looks next to Ryan Rollins, how he looks, period, and what we have in terms of the strengths here, that we can find a nice asset at a relatively team-friendly deal here in the summer to keep as another young piece of this core moving forward.
Yeah, totally agree. The youth really stands out. 22 years old, you're swapping him out with swapping him in. Coffee's out of here. I mean, you just got younger. I mean, you just got younger by a lot. I mean, I like it. I like it for just, you know, everything, all the reasons that you said, Justin, as well.
As of this recording, Amir Coffey had his career season high with the Bucks 16. I mean, looked great. Look, the last couple of games, he looked really good.
The last couple of games, he had a couple of 10-point quarters.
Raise this value. Raise this trade value up.
His value's all the way up.
Got it up.
Wish him, where's he at? He's in Phoenix. Not a bad place to land. He and Cole Anthony. So wish them well in Phoenix, and thank you for your service. Now, trades. Let's talk a little bit about the trades of other teams and some of the things that have happened leading up to the trading deadline today. What's give me a couple of Justin things that maybe you think will be impact deals, things that surprise you, whatever you want to talk about.
Well, I mean, first and foremost, well, in terms of the surprise and the impact, wasn't a total surprise after Tuesday, whenever the rumblings were out there, but the Harden for Darius Garland trade was very interesting, in that I think it's a clear signal there is, and the fact that Cleveland attached a pick as an asset too, I read that as there is very serious concerns over the foot and toe of Darius Garland, that we don't know. We can't trust it. We're moving on. It's still interesting for a team in the cap spot, and they did a good job of shedding a lot of that, but in the cap spot the Cavs were in, to go from a 26-year-old who was an all-star to 36-year-old James Harden, who you're going to have to pay in the offseason. And I think part of the fatigue for Bucks fans, too, is as much attention gets paid to Giannis and his contract situation. How many times have you guys heard someone point out, you know, the Cavs are not in a great spot with the cap? Donovan Mitchell's on the exact same contract as Giannis, and he can also be a free agent this summer. So are we going to have that conversation of do you need to keep an eye on this? So that was interesting to me, especially for a team that their question is around, can you get it done in the postseason? And that's the move that you made. So that one stood out. Overall with the Clippers too, I don't know about you guys. I was half expecting once that second deal and the Avisia Zubats trade went down, like, are we going to see something between now and the 2 o'clock deadline that they're also trading Kawhi Leonard? Like, are they just going to go on a full-on rebuild
For a second, it felt like that.
I mean, those were the interesting ones. And then, you know, like we talked about before too, with what do you do for these last 30 plus games with the Bucks and the fan perspective of, is it more important to get a good draft pick or do you get Giannis back and compete? I mean, the other thing that makes that interesting is look at what Chicago did. That seems to be a signal of, you know what, this is going to be the first year we're not in the play-in tournament, and we're fine to take a step backward. And if that's the case, it's going to come down to the Bucks and the Hornets for who gets that final spot.
Wow. Yeah. And yeah. So they jettisoned Ayo Dosunmu to Minnesota.
Basically, if you can name them on the Bulls, yeah, they're
but I thought that was great move for Minnesota. But yeah, also Coby White going to Charlotte with Charles Lee, our old buddy. I thought that was a great move going back to Tar Heel land. I mean, they Vucevic went to Boston. Man, Boston. They sure did. Man, they gutted that team.
Justin, back to the Cavs, right quick. They also, I think they got Schroeder and Keon Ellis from the Kings as well.
Right.
Do you like those moves? Does that make them a little more competitive, or what do you think about those two?
I mean, it's good insurance. Keon Ellis is intriguing, and he was the apple of a lot of Bucks fans' eyes too. Yeah. I think the only knock on Keon Ellis is he's obviously a very, very good individual defender. He's just a little small for a two guard, so he's not like a replacement in the move you made to send out DeAndre Hunter because of the size that Hunter brought. But the DeAndre Hunter experiment clearly didn't work or didn't yield the results that the Cavs had hoped for. So it gives you, at the time, we thought insurance in case Darius Garland is injured, and now we've seen it just gives you more ball handling and more guys that have been through the playoffs to supplement James Harden. But it's, you know, they reshape their roster on the fly, essentially, and we've seen a handful of teams do that. I kind of thought we were going to be in for a bit of a dud at this trade deadline just because of the CBA. Yeah. And I think what we've seen is it's just teams kind of trading problems with one another of we can't say the same, so let's just you take this and we'll take that.
Any thoughts on the rumblings of Chris Middleton being bought out? You think he might come back to Milwaukee? Anything on that after his trade to the Mavericks?
I mean, I think we would all love to have Chris back just for no other reason too. What we talked about of like the culture that you're building and to get that back and to get that around more of your young guys. I still believe there's going to be at least one contending team out there that looks at Chris Middleton and just says, this is exactly what we need. I mean, I think Chris has a little more in the tank at this point than the comp I'll make, but you think back to my guy throughout my childhood when Glenn Robinson went to the San Antonio Spurs and was just a bench guy there, was what, their 10th guy, and won a ring, but he was the guy that, okay, break in case of emergency, we'll play you when we need, and he's another guy that's a vet to have around there. Like, I think there's that, at worst, that type of role for Chris Middleton on one of the competing teams.
Yeah, and, you know, and the Bucks have a history, and a good one, with the late, great Junior Bridgman, Sidney Moncrief. I mean, they trade him away and then bring him back right at that last year just so they can finish their careers as a Milwaukee Buck. So we'll see if that happens with Chris. My final point is this. Have you guys ever watched the movie The Producers? Not the play, The Producers. Zero Mostel, Gene Wilder, Dick Shawn. So what it's about, it's like an accountant, Gene Wilder, comes across this scheme to sell more shares in a Broadway play than 100%, like sell 400%. And if the play is a flop, then the producers keep all the money. They keep all the money because the investors don't expect to get paid back. My biggest fear with the Bucks is that, you know, Giannis doesn't play a whole lot second half of the season, and this team just goes on this, you know, goes on this crazy roll. I don't know if it's even possible, but they go on this crazy roll. They've got a 2-game winning streak as of this recording. Got
the Patriots coming in. 2 straight wins. It's not a win streak till they get to 3. We might finally get our first win streak.
Got the Patriots coming in. So I mean, you know, so that thought occurred to me as I was headed over here, but. You know, as you talked about, Justin, culture, and if that happens, it's not on the players. You know, players are going to go out there; they're going to compete. It's really on kind of the personnel decisions, who's available. You know, who's available, how long Bobby Portis's hip situation stays with him. Yeah. You know, Giannis's minutes availability and all that. So, anyway, man, that's about all I wanted to cover on this trade deadline day. Here, a lot of great stuff going on, a lot of great conversation here with the Milwaukee Bucks, and the fantastic voyage continues because now we've got the rest of the season to kind of see what happens. Play in, play off, high draft pick, lottery, we don't know. So it's a whole lot of intrigue still left to this season. So we'll be here to cover it all for you. Justin Garcia, man, we thank you so much. You do a great job on radio with Dave Kane, and we got to have you back as we approach the next bevy of moves that will be made. And that's probably going to be around, after the season draft time. So All right. Here, District. That's it for us.